present the News Quiz with your host, Lucy Porter.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an announcement heard at Manchester Airport last weekend, read by Corrie Caulfield.
We apologise for the long delay at passport control. This is due to several aeroplanes arriving on schedule at the correct time.
Our thanks to Jane Maloney for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right Hugo Rifkind and stand-up comedian Eleanor Tiernan. And opposite them on my left, stand-up comedian Rhys James and Katie Brand. Hugo, whose deal is starting to lack confidence?
So this is about the difficult relationship between the Conservative government and the Democratic Unionist Party, which seemed at the time like, you know, this could be a match made in heaven because they're on the right and Conservatives are on the right and they wanted Brexit and Conservatives wanted Brexit. And for a mere £1 billion of taxpayers' money, demanded with menaces, the DUP were convinced to enter into a supply and confidence arrangement with the government in order to support their policies throughout the duration of government. Only now they're not going to. Now they've said, you know what, we're going to vote down the next budget because we're unhappy with what's happening in Brexit. Now, what they're unhappy about is a little complicated, but it's basically, if you're going to leave the EU and not be in a customs union with the EU, then you inevitably need a customs border either between Northern Ireland and the rest of Ireland or between the UK and all of Ireland. And the DUP is against both of these things. They're also against not doing Brexit and calling the whole thing off, which is sort of a problem. It's a bit like if you're in a taxi and you come to a T-junction and the driver goes, do you want to go left? And you go, no. And the driver goes, do you want to go right? And you go, no. And the driver goes, shall we just stay here then? And you go, no. And the driver goes, so look, what are we supposed to do? And you say, well, actually, my cunning plan is that a magic unicorn is going to arrive and take us all to some distant magic land which doesn't exist yet and everything's going to be fine. And in the absence of Theresa May offering this, unreasonably, the DUP are basically saying, look, do what we want or we're going to force an election and we'll take our chances with Jeremy Corbyn. And what Theresa May ought to be saying to that is, what, you mean the Jeremy Corbyn who's mates with Jerry Adams? You know, the Jeremy Corbyn whose shadow chancellor is going to be John McDonnell, who literally praised the bombs and bullets of the IRA. You're going to take a chance with that Jeremy Corbyn and see if that's better for Ulster unionism. But they're not saying that. They're just saying no. And so for Theresa May, increasingly, the only option is the Canada option, which isn't any sort of deal. It just means her moving there by herself. And living in an igloo, perhaps forever.
Poor Theresa May. She, you know when they say there's always someone worse off than you? I think increasingly that is, they mean Theresa May, don't they? But if ever I feel bad about having spent money on something, I think, well, at least I didn't spend £1 billion on the DUP, you know?
The thing is, the irony is they keep saying we have to be in regulatory alignment with the rest of the UK, except apparently when it comes to single-sex marriage, abortion rights for women, apparently that's all fine then. Yeah. That's all, we'll do our own thing on that.
Also, yeah. Dog licences.
Oh, really?
Yes, you need a dog
really
licence.
Really hard line on dog licence.
You need a dog licence in Northern Ireland and only in Northern Ireland. It's an outrage.
That was a great quote I read. I don't know if it came from Arlene Foster herself, but it was from the DUP, I think, about all of this and about the red lines, which was the most hard-line thing I've heard from anyone in Brexit, which was, this is a game of who blinks first and we cut off our eyelids.
It's amazing.
So Theresa May just doing that weird bow she does when she's with a member of the royal family, just backing out of the room like this, just a limb at a time.
Everyone else has been talking about red lines, but Arlene Foster talked about blood red lines.
Yeah.
They're so dramatic. It's like, I bet they don't have a black coffee. It's like, coffee as black as a raven's grief. They are extraordinary. Eleanor, I don't want to lump the whole of Ireland in together.
But I wish I had something, some solution for you guys, but no, it's a pile of dung, isn't it? It's very hard from the perspective of somebody from the Republic to understand Brexit because we're so into the EU in Ireland. We love them. Like, we've got teenagers have posters of Michel Barnier on their wall in Ireland. They have an 88% approval rating in Ireland, the EU. It's actually too high. We've been asked to tone it down a bit. They said, seriously, have a little bit of self-respect, Ireland, will you? We're like, whatever you want, whatever you like, but have you thought about what you want for Christmas? Go on, go on. It's just tricky. We're holding on with bated breath to see what you guys do. And, we'd be delighted if you'd just stick to one position. Yeah.
No, I don't understand any of it. I really don't get it. I don't get this hard border stuff. I thought a hard border is just what you got if you snuck a nuts magazine into Eton.
And what good news from the Supreme Court might the DUP have been happy with this week?
Oh, this is the gay cake. Yes, cakes aren't allowed to be gay anymore. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
I mean, no. I thought all cakes were gay.
Well, yeah, most of them. So there were bakers in Northern Ireland, and they were asked to create a cake that was celebrating equal marriage in some sort of way, and they said no, and it went to court about whether or not you have the right as a baker to refuse to make a cake celebrating equal marriage, and it turns out you do.
Yeah, so, yeah. And it were Asher's Bakery, and I think it had Bert and Ernie from Sesame Street on it.
And it looked nice. Mm. It's a shame that it didn't get eaten.
Did you say you've seen the cake?
I saw a picture of the cake. But I haven't been in the same room as the cake.
But if they didn't make the cake, you can't have seen the cake.
Yeah, maybe it was an artist's impression of the cake, but it did look like a nice cake. Look, I'll even eat a picture of a cake.
I'll just get a cake.
It's because they didn't want to support the message. But since when does making a cake of a thing mean you support that thing? Like an M&S in favour of massive caterpillars.
This is the DUP have threatened that they may vote against the upcoming budget in spite of having a supply and confidence deal with the Conservatives as a protest against Theresa May's Brexit plans. Downing Street has insisted that a defeat on the budget wouldn't amount to a vote of no confidence, much like it insisted that May losing her majority last year wasn't really a defeat, and the ongoing chip pan fire in the kitchen will be fine if they just leave it to burn itself out. According to the DUP, it is vital that Northern Ireland is treated exactly the same as the rest of the UK, with the exception of curtailing basic rights for gay people and women, which it's allowed to do because it got a special note from Jesus. 2 points to Hugo. Eleanor, who's trying to create a climate of change?
This story is from a report that came out this week, and it's on a thing called climate change. Do we know what this climate change thing is? It's a new thing that they're bringing out. Basically, we thought we had a lot more time to fix the planet than we actually do. We thought it was going to be by 2030 that the global temperature would have risen 1.5 degrees, but it turns out it's going to have risen to 3 degrees. And I think if scientists expect us to take this 3 degrees seriously, they need to stop choosing threats that are named after 1960s pop bands. They're telling us we need to act now before we will stop this global catastrophe. But I think if we needed to take this serious, I think the politicians would be on it. And I don't see them doing anything about it, so I'm not. I went on the UK government website to see what directions they had for, you know, citizens, what can we do to stop climate change. There's nothing there, so obviously it doesn't matter. There was one thing that I saw there where they said there's quite an extensive section on how to apply for a fishing rod licence, so I decided I would apply for that. I think maybe that's what they mean. Maybe they're telling us, you know, that the water levels are going to rise, so, you know, get your fishing rod licence now, you know, because that's how we're going to feed ourselves. I don't know, I think there's more concerning items on the news agenda. I saw some stuff about Strictly Come Dancing this week. And that deserves a public information campaign for sure. Like, these people, they were supposed to be only pretending to be attracted to each other, and it turns out that they actually were. I feel very deceived by that. I think that deserves more of an information campaign than this climate change crap. I do. You could have one that says, dance responsibly. That's what I would suggest that they go for.
It's nice to have a panellist whose views chime so completely with Donald Trump's. quite unusual. I mean, it's
a diversity thing. I'm trying to get the angle in.
Yes.
No, I'm relieved you're here because it's the BBC, so it's like illegal to have a panel discussion on climate change that doesn't include one person who completely denies it utterly, perhaps while literally smoking a burning tyre. So well done you.
Thanks, guys.
Well, look, all we need to do, I was reading about this, all we need to do for everything to be fine is stop eating meat, rebuild all of our houses, fundamentally overhaul our economy, and invent lots of new technologies that are going to make everything OK. And I reckon we can manage that.
I mean, is there anything we can do to help? What do you think?
I don't know. I agree with Eleanor a bit. I think that given that it's meant to be an international emergency, no one seems that asked. Like, it is like, it's an emergency. What should we do? Oh, maybe just don't have a straw with your Frappuccino. It should be a level of an emergency like the Second World War, and we should all be given electric cars like Anderson shelters. We're so used to the responsibility of everything being thrown onto the individual and the individual consumer. It's like the government is now addicted to that, and something that is a genuine international global emergency. There's no joke at the end of this, by the way. surely there should be more. There should be a massive emergency package that we're all forced to abide by. Sorry, that sounds a bit fascist. But is it an emergency or not? That's essentially what I'm asking.
Well, the problem is, if it is an emergency, it is to, you know, what can you do? You can install solar panels, you can give up meat, or you can just form a violent mob to overthrow the international fossil fuels lobby and then march around wearing Michael Gove's skin as a suit.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Because Michael Gove is the Environment Secretary and he looks like he's never been outside. But the thing is, climate change deniers, they're just people who don't want to accept responsibility, but they've got nothing to go on. Like, in, like, 20 years, the planet will be ruined, and they'll be there going, oh, look, the world's destroying itself. It must be a Banksy.
I just think we need to be told what to do, like, from tomorrow.
Basically, do I need a pension or not?
Yes, this is the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, who this week released a landmark report warning that we have only 12 years to keep global warming below 1.5 degrees or face environmental catastrophe. At the current rate, we could reach 1.5 degrees of warming by 2030. And that's without factoring in the carbon dioxide released when Donald Trump leaves office and starts burning all the paperwork. If we do nothing and global temperatures increase, hundreds of millions could face catastrophe and infrastructures could collapse. But on the bright side, Loughborough has everything it takes to make for a beautiful seaside town. If you have a child now, they will probably never see a polar bear. And if your child is 15 now, they will probably never see a polar bear. You yourself will probably never see a polar bear. Nothing to do with climate change. They're just very elusive. 2 points to Eleanor. Rhys, who's calling last orders on booze?
Young people are. Thank you for asking. This is the story that young people, it turns out, aren't drinking alcohol, really, anymore. And I understand that you've obviously asked me as the representative of youth on this panel, but this data is about 16 to 25-year-olds, and I am 27, and thus an alcoholic. I actually sort of agree with the data. As a young person, I don't drink that much. I consider myself a social drinker. I only drink at parties, by which I mean I've never had a drink in my life. So basically 30% or something of 16 to 25-year-olds don't drink, right? But then there's all this speculation on why are young people drinking less, and everyone's getting involved and saying, oh, it's because they're spending their money on drugs, which is more cost-effective, let me tell you. Or they're saying, oh, it's because they're saving up for a house. Right, do you know how bad the housing situation is for young people? They're not going to solve it by just not buying a Carlsberg. Right, the only way that my generation will be able to get a house is if their parents die, right? And the quickest way for that to happen is to just let them have all the alcohol. That is... There's a lot deeper than you think. There's stuff to do now as well, that's the thing. That's why this generation don't need booze, because now we've got Netflix. The previous generations had to talk to each other, no wonder they got pissed all the time. You don't want to be sober if your main method of entertainment is hitting a hula hoop with a stick. I've done zero research into the past.
You're spot on, actually.
Yeah,
you are
exactly.
Spot on. I'm glad you have backed up the statistics there, which is quite... I mean, anecdotally, I could back them up as well. I think young people are less keen. My 8-year-old can't stand the stuff.
I'm quite quite worried about this phenomenon. I think maybe, you know, human beings, we have depended on alcohol for centuries to get us through tough times, bad relationships, bad exam results, good exam results, you know, those kind of situations. And I'm worried that, you know, alcohol will turn its back on us if we don't keep availing of it. So I think young people are playing a dangerous game, you know, and I do have to come clean, actually. I don't drink. I am one of those people. I'm not in the age category, but I had to stop. It was time. It was time. I got a letter from L'Oreal telling me I wasn't worth it anymore.
I mean, I'm drunk now. I mean, it was, for me, you know, drinking definitely at that age, it was a huge... I mean, now you've got your trendy alternatives like self-confidence.
I completely agree with this theory that we drank because we didn't have anything else to do. I mean, when you were a kid, you drank because the alternative was, like, solvents or headbutting a wall until you got dizzy, which both of which I did quite a lot in bus shelters. Whereas now, well, anyway, I was thinking, now why don't young people drink? And I thought, well, they're never bored now. They're always busy. There's always something to do. They're always on social media, reading social media. Then I thought, no, that doesn't work because that's why I drink. So I don't know. It's just a kind of sort of social change that I might understand if I was sober.
I think you're on Twitter rather than Tinder. That's your problem.
Is that my problem?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it. We're reading all the awful stuff and not just getting off with people and getting... I've never had a picture of anyone's penis on my... Well, no, I'm not asked.
For you right now, Lucy.
I mean, will that question make it solicited?
saying that on the radio is bold.
Although there is, I think, because you drink, and then I think, you know, it's, for me, it slowed down because, you know, I was getting older, and then I had kids. And, like, because when people say they don't drink, like, young people, I'm like, just wait till you have kids. After our kids have gone to bed, our living room is like Hogarth's Gin Lane. But I think it does sort of come and go in your life, doesn't
it? Yeah,
you
still... Oh, that's sweet that you're still pretending you don't drink until the kids have gone to bed.
Yeah, the kids go to bed at noon. I mean, you know, but... yes, this is the news that almost a third of 18 to 24-year-olds in the UK do not drink alcohol at all. This might be due to cost, health concerns, or the fact that we've made the world so weird that they all just think they're hammered already. Young people's lives are very different now. For example, these days, TV is actually good. Back in the old days, you needed at least half a bottle of Rioja to get through a peak practice. The trend is set to continue after Brexit, when the only alcohol we'll be able to drink is a weak turnip wine made by Jeremy Corbyn. That's 2 points to Rhys. Katie, who's warned that the government might be universally discredited?
Right, well, this is the story that seems to be kicking off this week about universal credit. They've been kind of gradually rolling this out, this thing that everyone agrees is a good idea, but no one can figure out how to make it work. And now, finally, John Major has kicked off in that John Major-y way. He's got quite feisty since he stopped being the Prime Minister, hasn't he? I quite fancy him now. But anyway, John Major has kicked off about universal credit, which is this system of bringing all the existing benefits together into one monthly payment. And it's very, very, very complicated, it seems. And it's all supposed to start for everyone, I think, next spring. Mm-hmm. And there just doesn't seem to be a sense that anybody is ready for this. And there's going to be riots, some people are predicting, and people are just going to be in a really bad way. So it just sounds very, very complicated. I can't imagine how it's all going to work. They have to bring together all these things. They have to monitor when people's income go up or down. Like, I can't even work an Excel spreadsheet. Like, I literally put all the numbers into all the cells, and then I add them up on a calculator. And then I write the figure in the bottom cell and I just pretend I've done it all with the magic things. So to me, this just seems mind-blowingly complicated. So, yeah.
Well, even John Major, as you said, he told the BBC, "I think we need to look carefully at how universal credit is introduced and when it is introduced and what the circumstances are and the resources that are available to assist its introduction." Yet another electrifying reminder of the sort of thrilling rhetoric that made John Major the Muhammad Ali of early 90s politics. Hugo, do you think, is it well-intentioned in principle, universal credit?
It's sort of well-intentioned, because the idea behind it is, look, you've got to make work pay, right? You've got to make it so that people are better off rather than worse off if they're in work. But you'd think the obvious way to do that is make them earn more if they're in work, mm-hmm. not make them have less if they're not in work. And that's kind of the way around it's working. I think when you've got John Major saying, hang on, this might get a bit hairy to a Conservative government, you've got to sort of sit up and take notice of that. Yeah.
They said, "What, to Theresa May, what do you need to make this work, universal credit?" And she said, "Money."
They'd be better off just spending the money they have got entering the whole country in the postcode lottery.
It does sound like such a nice thing. The name is wonderful. Universal credit. You know, they should get rid of the system and just keep the name and make it about, you know, giving people rewards for doing good deeds, like universal credit. You know, like you helped an old lady across the road. Here's a tenner. You know,
that kind of thing. Universal credit.
Yeah, credits from the universe.
You can use it anywhere.
Yeah.
This week, former Prime Minister Sir John Major warned that the way the government is rolling out universal credit could prove as hated with the public as Margaret Thatcher's poll tax. The poll tax could have brought down the sitting Conservative government were it not for the huge unpopularity of the then Labour leader. For any déjà vu fans out there, we just need Jeremy Corbyn to fall into the sea and we've got a full house. Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell has confirmed that Labour would scrap universal credit and replace it with a weekly visit from Jeremy's jam bus. A converted open-top double-decker fitted with a high-powered jam hose. Get your burlap sacks ready, the jam's about to fire out!
You know what it says on the side of the bus? Jam tomorrow.
2 points to Katie. At the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Eleanor have 4 and Rhys and Katie have 5. Yep. Corrie is the fairest of all the newsreaders because she always explains her bonus points. Do you want to tell what the bonus points were for?
Well, as bonus point to this team for the splendid Arlene Foster impression and also for Rhys's marvellous insights to the youth of today.
I do love, like, people get so obsessed with the points. And they do always write and they go, how did you lose a point?
I'm not obsessed, all right? It's fine.
We start round two with a news story from Prague seen on the BBC website.
A highly venomous green mamba snake escaped from its owner on Tuesday after biting her in the Czech capital.
To Timo in Wendover for sending us that. Hugo, who's telling her fans not to shake it off when it comes to the midterms?
Oh, OK. Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift, the popular singing artist, told her 112 million Instagram followers in the US midterm elections to vote based on who most closely represents your values. And everyone agreed immediately that this meant that she was a Democrat, although I'd suggest that the values of an 11-year-old girl who obsessively stalks Taylor Swift on Instagram might not be that different from the current Republican president. But she went on, anyway, to specifically endorse the Democratic candidate in Tennessee, criticising the Republican incumbent, and 102,000 new voters had registered in the next 48 hours, they reckon, entirely because of this. And so the Democrat candidate, he was delighted. Meanwhile, the far right in America are very upset because they always liked Taylor Swift because they thought she looked like a Nazi. And just reporting. And also Donald Trump was a bit upset. Someone asked him if he minded and he said, "I like her music 25% less now."
Can I just say, Hugo, when you called her a popular singing artist,
yes,
that is the youngest I've ever felt in my life.
What's your favourite Taylor Swift album?
Album, 1989.
Look at that.
You don't know if that's the one or not, do you? So, I could have said any word then, and I'd have got away with it. Obviously, people would have written in, but...
I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah. I just think it's not a great return, is it? She got 112 million followers and 100,000 people signed up to vote. That's, like, less than half.
It In US politics this week, voter registration in the States experienced an unexpected surge after Taylor Swift threw her political weight behind two Democrat nominees for Tennessee in the midterms. Some older listeners may not know who Taylor Swift is. So to put it in context, some of you might remember the furore ahead of the 1974 general election when Suzy Quatro endorsed Harold Wilson and Jackie. It's a bit like that. Many celebrities do have a lot of political pull. I voted for Paddy Ashdown in 92 after Jeanette Cranky told me to do it in a dream. 2 points to Hugo. Eleanor, who can't hide from their mistake?
Is this a story that was in to the bank? A very good citizen in Birmingham was walking past a local branch of NatWest, and because all these banks now have glass fronts, spotted in the window an employee of the bank cowering underneath their desk. So they did what you're told to do, see it, say it, sorted. They called up the police. Police arrived at the bank to foil what they thought was going to be a robbery. Turns out it was a team building exercise that the bank were going through. It was a game of hide and seek that was being played, and I don't know, it raises a whole load of questions for me, that particular incident. How does playing hide and seek help you do your job in a bank better? How seriously were the bank employees taking the game of hide and seek that the member of the public couldn't tell from their face that it was just a game? They were obviously really, really into it.
You're right, because it said that they were cowering, the member of the public saw them cowering under their... You know, why were they... If it's just a game of hide and seek, you know, what was the punishment for losing 40 lashes with a paying in book, presumably?
They asked, what have you learned from this whole situation? And I think they've said, we need to find better hiding places. Someone just walking by can see you, then you're not bringing your A game, frankly.
Imagine how much that branch manager must have been so scared, right, when someone said to him, let's play hide and seek. And he went, OK, I'll shut my eyes and count to 100. Next thing he hears is sirens. He must have thought, how did I fall for that? That is the oldest trick in the book.
I just wondered if this is what's going on when it takes 45 minutes to get through to online banking, you know.
A good team-building exercise would be how to learn how to accept accountability for causing a global financial crash.
Police attended what they thought was a bank raid in Birmingham this week, only to discover that the staff were hiding under their desks due to a team-building game of hide-and-seek. Chief Inspector Dave Keane tweeted to say that phoning the police had been the right call, adding that he loves getting to drive fast with the knee-knalls on. And thoughts and prayers go to the family of Jennifer, whose perfect hiding spot in the airtight vault was not discovered until after the long weekend. When the police realised their mistake, they apologised to the startled workers before moving on to tear gas a game of British Bulldog in a Holland and Barrett. After the mix-up, staff ended the game and went back to their usual job of hiding from any customers. 2 points to Eleanor. Oh, lovely, it's a music-y one now. Rhys, have a listen to this. A lovely mid-show pick-me-up, isn't it? That's cheery. I love the fact you're...
The thing I love about the music round on the news quiz is that it always goes on for a bit too long.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where you think, are we just listening to the song now?
So, Rhys, who did pack their bags themselves?
Oh, this is the story that loads of people are now going on holiday on their own. One in six, apparently, are travelling solo these days. People have basically finally cottoned on to the fact that the thing that ruins most situations is anyone else being there. So they started going on holiday alone, mainly because people don't want to compromise. That's the main thing, isn't it? They don't want to compromise. That's fair enough, I think. Like, last year, me and my girlfriend were trying to book a holiday. I was like, oh, let's go to Egypt. I want to see the pyramids. And she was like, oh, let's not. I want to see other people. So I went on holiday alone. Anyway, but the thing is, the main one, they say, the main destination for solo travel is Asia, apparently. And that makes you think, well, is this really new information? Like, middle-aged men have been going on suspicious solo holidays and calling them business trips to Bangkok since before the internet. So I just think this is all a bit dodgy, if you ask me. What I would say is I think it's fine to do loads of stuff on your own, basically. Like, there's just such shame on doing stuff on your own. I do loads of stuff alone. Mm-hmm. You know, I go to the cinema on my own. I have sex on my own sometimes. No complaints so far, except from the downstairs neighbours. It's basically fine. What I would say is go on holiday on your own, but don't make the mistake I did, which is I did the opposite. Right, I let my family go on holiday while I stayed home on my own. Right, funny story, actually. I was about 10 years old, and these two burglars tried to... had to booby-trap the whole place.
I have went on holiday on my own once, and it's hands down the best holiday, one of the best holidays I've ever been on, definitely. Mm. I went for New Year. I'd had a very long year of working hard, and I just split up with someone, and I wanted to go on holiday, and I couldn't be bothered to find anyone to go on holiday with, so I thought I could just do that with myself. Like, it might be quite therapeutic for me to go on holiday for a week and see whether I can stand to be with myself for a week. And my main advice is to take a book. It was over New Year, I went to Egypt, and I went to Sharm el-Sheikh. I didn't feel lonely because a lot of the men who worked in the hotel assumed I was there on a sex holiday. I did not know that was a thing. And I actually found one member of staff in my hotel room washing my swimming costumes by hand in the bath. It didn't put me off. Reader, I married him. No,
Glorious. Mm. Oh, because I always thought when you watch Shirley Valentine, I always like the bit before she meets the bloke. That seems like the... I mean, I quite like the idea, especially since having kids, because now my idea of a holiday now is just, you know, doing an uninterrupted poo, quite frankly.
A friend of mine went on holiday recently and she said on Facebook that she was enjoying the novelty of eating the whole egg on her own and not just the yolks because her children didn't like them. Yeah. Comes to that.
Well, it's because you don't realise the compromises that you make, do you? When you're, you know, you're with other people all the time. I mean, would you rather go on your own or just go with people who are, like, if you could choose people?
I do travel a lot on my own. The one thing I will say is that it gets tricky when you need somebody to mind your stuff. You know, because you'll often be travelling with your luggage and you'll be at the train station and have to use the facilities. And what do you do? You know, do you bring your suitcase into the toilet cubicle with you, or do you ask somebody to look after it, or if you don't, do you just leave it there and cause a terrorist alert?
I've been on holiday on my own, and it's things like just not having anyone to rub sun cream into your back as well. Is like, you know, you just have to put it on a tree. This is the news that 15% of travellers took a trip on their own last year and that the tendency for solo travel could be on the rise. More people are choosing to take a holiday by themselves because they don't want to compromise on where they go and what they do. Well, they sound fun. Why does no one want to travel with them? The upward trend has been attributed to the availability of apps that connect people to other solo travellers. That's called Tinder, and it works anywhere. You don't have to go to Corfu to find someone who'll tickle your bits behind a bin and say no more about it.
Is that what Miles is doing?
Do you know, he is in Corfu, and
yeah,
he did sound cheerful.
Yeah.
He sounded happier than he's done in years. You'll never see me going on holiday alone. You need a second person to create a diversion at the breakfast buffet while you fill a bag with ham. That's 2 points to Reese. Katie.
Yes.
Have a listen to this. All around me are familiar faces, worn out places, worn out faces. Prepped and delivered for their daily races. Going nowhere, going nowhere. Katie, which study can we take at face value?
Well, there has been a study that's been done to see how many faces humans can recognise and remember. And apparently they have discovered that the average is about 5,000, which I don't know, I felt quite surprised by that, but then I thought I could probably recognise 5,000 faces, but I'm damned if I can remember any of their names.
And I'm just glad that I've got all your names written down here.
The other incredible jaw-dropping finding was that people who've grown up in the country, in small communities, don't know or recognise as many people as those who have grown up in a more city environment. So, I don't know, I feel like I could have got there on my own, maybe, without the test. But 5,000 is quite a lot. I was quite impressed by that number.
Do you think there might only be 5,000 faces? I know that sounds weird, but if you think about it, there aren't that many configurations of noses. And 5,000 sounds about as much as you could really imagine. And if we're only going to remember 5,000, no one's going to know.
God. Well, because like I look at men's faces and I think, well, you've got clean shaven, beard, glasses and a beard, moustache and Noel Edmonds.
I think what you're doing there is just the game Guess Who.
Yeah, do you know? That, I remember all of those. Yeah. I remember everything, especially Bernard.
Bernard, yes. Bernard. Well, Bernard looked like he had a bit of a naughty twinkle, didn't he?
That John Major touch so much.
Oh, don't.
Is it, how many people have you met, Reece?
How many are on this panel? I find all this quite hard to believe, given that my mum can't recognise the face of an actor we saw three scenes ago. Also, it's quite easy to cheat on these tests when you're being asked. Because you could have just been shown a picture of any woman and gone, ah, oh, she was in Sugar Babes, and statistically you're probably right.
I once read about a man who said psychically or in a dream he'd been given the face of the person who shot John F. Kennedy, and he sketched it and then showed it to them, and they said, who's that? And he went, I don't know. That's your job to find out. I've only seen his face.
I was confused by it. Is it that you retain... what happens when you see 5,000 people and you know them and then the 5,000 and first person comes along? Do you throw out the first person that you saw?
The other one that I've had is... have you ever had the one where you recognise or you think you know someone but they're just famous?
Oh, yeah.
And I did that with... well, I was in a bar and there was a guy next to me and I sort of looked up and smiled and he smiled back and I was like, oh, I bet we used to work together. And I had this really awkward thing and, you know, all the thing of, oh, so how are you? How are you doing? And got no further forward and then went back to my friends. I went, oh, my God, some ginger bloke I used to work with was just at the bar and I've got no idea. And they looked over and went, no, that's Damien Lewis.
So I've kind of done that out the other side. And I was once, when I lived in Camden, I was once in the supermarket, and next to me there was a member of Blur at the checkout, and I was thinking, and I was a gossip diarist at the time, I think I'm totally going to check out this member of Blur's basket and see what he's buying. And I stood there looking, and he was giving me these weird looks. And then he left, and I went home and said to my wife, you never believe, I saw this guy from Blur in the supermarket. And she was like, didn't you interview him last week? And I was like, oh, yeah. So it is.
On the flip side, I once had someone come up to me in Sainsbury's about 6 months ago. I was trying to buy bananas, which is more complicated than it needs to be these days. So I was sort of held in front of the bananas for a while. And she was like, oh, my God, I know you. I was like, oh, no. I said, how do we know each other? I was like, no, we don't. Honestly, we don't. She's like, I do. How do we know each other? I know we've met. And I was trying to be humble and nice. So I was like, oh, no, honestly, we don't. Backing away. And she said, I went, I know what it is. And I thought, oh, the penny's dropped. Wonder what she's seen me on. And she went, you work for Woking Childcare Services. And I said, no, I don't. She went, you do, why are you being weird? Honestly, I don't work for Woking Childcare Services, I really, really don't. She was like, you do, come on, don't be ridiculous. And I was like, no, I honestly don't work for Woking Childcare Services, nice to meet you, bye. Anyway, she followed me around the whole of Sainsbury's, insisting that I work for Woking Childcare Services. So in the end, I just gave up and agreed with her. We just slagged off Martin from Library Services. But at the end, she went, you're going to be so embarrassed about this at work on Monday. I'm like, I'm not, because I don't.
You should have taken her kids.
This is a psychology study by the University of York that has found humans can recognise 5,000 different people from their faces. The participants were shown thousands of photographs of celebrities and asked to name as many as they could. Turned out they were all Meryl Streep. That's how good she is. Humans use facial recognition to tell people apart because it has tragically become taboo to stick your nose in their anus and give it a really good huff. Huff got me there for a second. In other facial recognition news this week, the actor Liam Neeson has claimed that a horse recognised him when he returned to the set of his latest movie. When Liam Neeson walked away, the horse whinnied to its neighbour. He never forgets a face, that's Sean Bean. So that's 2 points to Katie. And before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they would like to share? Hugo.
Yes. Rachel Fittle has sent this in from the local Free Hampshire magazine. And the story is that Southampton Football Club are hosting their first ever combined final of Miss and Mr. Southampton. And the headline says, "How would you like to enter Miss Southampton?" Here's your big chance.
And Eleanor.
Richard Andrews saw this misprint on a local buy and sell Facebook page in Havant. Virtually new black and white bed frame for sale. Can sell with mistress if required.
Reese.
David Pitcher found this in the Kimpton Parish magazine, Hertfordshire, in an article about the Memorial Hall. Lastly, we must offer our thanks in this regard to John Marsh, whose tireless work with the Hertfordshire Naturists has resulted in an agreement that we will hold their balls for the next 7 years.
Katie!
This is from Azerbaijan's Azer News and was spotted by Charlie Jacoby in Somerset. It says, "Last season, about 450 licences were granted for hunting rabbits, 860 for water birds, and others for hunting wild boars. In addition, 240 licences were granted for foreign tourists."
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Hugo and Eleanor have 9, and Reese and Katie have 9! Before we leave you, here is something seen on a menu in a London restaurant sent in by Ian Reed.
"If you'd like a straw, please ask one of your waiters. They are biodegradable."
And with that, goodbye!
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Hugo Rifkin, Eleanor Tiernan, Rhys James and Katie Brand. In the chair was Lucy Porter, and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, Benjamin Partridge and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Heidi Regan and Mike Shepherd. The producer was Nick Coop, and it was a BBC Studios production.